Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good morning. This is Doug Field, the CEO of the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism, and welcome to this week's edition of Healthcare Consumerism Radio. And joining me in studio is our radio producer, Jonathan Field. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning.
And actually, in studio today versus in the Bay in Florida is our co-host, Ron Bachman. Ron, good morning.
Good morning on this sunny, wonderful day in Atlanta.
I tell you, it's beautiful, isn't it?
It is. It's gorgeous. Spring is about upon us.
Yeah, it's almost 80 degrees yesterday and going to be about the same today, I think. So it's great. Well, we got a great program today. We're going to lead off in about 10 minutes with Michael Romanzo, who's Chief Strategy Officer with RX Benefits, going to talk about a really important topic, and that is employee pharmacy benefits and, you know, what organizations need to be doing to really understand where they can save money, offer, you know, better cost alternatives and care alternatives to their employees. And then following Michael will be Dr. Abby Leibowitz, co-founder and chief medical officer with really one of the original health advocacy firms in the country, Health Advocate. And, Abby's going to be talking about using data to drive behavior. And they do some really quality things at Health Advocate. So great guest coming up.
It is. I'm looking forward to it. It's an exciting program.
Yeah, it is. And, we're pretty excited about a webinar we've got coming up at the end of the month. We're partnering with Aidcentive. And developed a webinar focused on helping brokers really understand benefit technology and how benefit technology can become a really good tool for them to not only serve their clients better, but to build their practices. And the title of the webinar is The Digital Revolution, How Brokers Can Win. So this will be held March 29th at 11 a.m. You can register by going to the IHC website, theihcc.com. But very important topic, Ron. Wouldn't you agree that? Yeah.
Oh, it's really great that you're putting on this webinar. You know, in healthcare consumerism, we've been talking a lot lately about the patient-provider relationship as being the most trusted relationship. And we actually tend to overlook another very important trusted relationship, and that's between the consumer and the agent. It's a very strong relationship. They trust them with getting the right insurance, the right premium, the right coverage, the right carrier, and building on that and the services around building the strength of that relationship is really important to the whole idea of consumerism.
Yeah, and I think, when it comes to an online benefit marketplace and really understanding the totality of a benefit marketplace, brokers have a lot of decisions to make and a lot of thorough research to do. I think at the end of the day, when they find the right partner, that they'll see it's an asset to them. It's an asset to their practice, and it's a great tool for them to really serve their clients and build their business.
You know, too many agents in the past have just approached their clients once a year, around renewal. Take them out to lunch, tell them you got a 20-25% rate increase, and then the client doesn't see the broker for another year. And that's why a lot of them are getting out of the business these days, because you've got to be a little bit more hands-on. You got to have better systems in place so that your practice, your brokerage practice is running efficiently, that you've got the data around what's going on with your own clients. You really need to have a lot more technology in the back office these days to stay connected to your clients, or you're going to lose them.
Yeah, and it's I think it's real important for brokers to hear from other brokers too. And one of the things that we're doing with Aidcentive around their Web Insure benefit marketplace is on this webinar will be a representative from Cypress Exchange, which is a broker firm, and what they're doing to use really this as a tool to really serve their clients and to grow their business.
No, that'll be a great webinar, and I'm looking forward to listening in on that and hearing the presentation. I always learn a lot during these webinars, and this is one that's really a hot topic because there's a lot of competition coming in the market, some new players coming in that are offering up systems. And
If
you're not keeping up with what's going on in the marketplace, you're going to lose out on your customers, you're going to lose out on your business, and you'll wind up having to go someplace else to earn a living, because the days of just riding on the insurance carriers coming in with their service managers to take care of your clients or to prepare everything for a renewal, Those days are gone. You got to be a little bit more hands-on, a little bit more consulting, which means more technology in the back room to make all this stuff work.
Yeah, and I think it's real important that brokers out there spend this time to learn, because they are confused about the benefit technology options.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of things being thrown at them, and beyond just the benefit marketplace, a lot of things coming at them. And when it comes to benefit marketplace, I think it's real important to understand who's behind these marketplaces, and, you know, do they have the technology expertise to make it happen? Do they have a track record of making it happen? And, you know, HSenative and Web Insurer has got a very long track record of in the public market and with health plans and others and serving the market well. And so, I mean, so there's many choices out there, and, you know, it's important that the brokers take time and really understand what are all the moving parts and who can really, you know, serve their needs. And is the marketplace provider, you know, moving to provide, you know, I mean, we're still in phase one. We talked about a private exchange form. We're still in the early stage of private exchange evolution. But the path is pretty clear that you want to be with a partner that will end up being that 365, 24/7 portal, benefit portal, that will have a very rounded out model with all the various services, not just major medical or voluntary, you know, or wellness or telehealth or transparency, but all of that in that model.
Well, you bring in a good point, and connecting it back to the forums that you have, the one we just had on the private exchanges, the one coming up in Atlanta, very much for and a lot of part of the audience is our brokers, agents out there, and consultants trying to find out what's going on around healthcare consumerism, whether it's the backroom technology or other vendors or other services, other products. It all kind of mixes in for all the different choices and options that are going on in the marketplace. So timely nature for this webinar.
And again, if I didn't mention it before, it's a free webinar. And again, it's 11 o'clock on Tuesday the 29th. We urge you to sign up now at our website, theiacc.com. But, you know, talking about technology and talking about what's happening around innovation and other things, that leads us right into our major event coming up in Atlanta, May 24th through 26th. I mean, we'll be in deep discussions around online marketplaces, around other benefit technology that's bringing different solutions together in one place. Digital health will be big and talked about there, transparency or health access, whatever we want to call it. I think we're coming up with what are the right brand names for it now. So all of that happening around wellness, happening around benefits, happening around healthcare, happening around direct primary care is going to be, you know, showcased at, you know, Forum and Expo in Atlanta.
It's the big event of the year. And so, you know, if you're not there, you're going to be missing out. So people in the Atlanta market, in the Atlanta region, outside there, Delta flies into Atlanta all the time in the home base here, cheap flights, frequent flights in and out.
Southwest too.
Southwest, a lot of different airline options for people coming into here. So it's really a great event at a great location. It's going to be over 1,000 people. I think you're probably going to be pushing 1,200 hopefully this year. A lot of different ideas and options. We've got about 40 of the major employers represented here in Atlanta at the meeting. We already got them lined up. They're going to be participating in the program and be part of the audiences as well. But we know we've got a really good representation of employers. So anybody who really wants to understand what employers are doing, if you're selling services and want to be represented there, couldn't have a better opportunity with some of these conferences are mega conferences with, you know, thousands and thousands of people, and you kind of get lost in the shuffle, and you may not get the opportunity to talk as closely and network as closely.
But,
and the energy at these is just unbelievable. I mean, people are really having a good time and connecting at these conferences.
I think that's true. And, you know, one of our unique footprints that we talk about all the time, but just to remind our audience, is that, you know, you can go to single function. You can go to an employer event. You can go to a single broker event. You could go to a health plan event, et cetera. But we created the Institute in our events to represent multi-stakeholders because, Ron, to your point, that's what drives these discussions. And, you know, people said, hey, we have a lot of popcorn discussions at your event because you'll be sitting around the table with some similar people. It might be fellow employers, but there's a broker there, there's a health plan there, there's an innovator there, there's benefit consultants there, there's even emerging providers and health system people in that room. Then that creates these discussions.
No, it's great because it's usually people who are on the leading edge, especially those innovators, as you call them, the solution providers, The focus in the conference is always on the early adopters and the fast followers with new ideas. So if you're out there struggling, wondering what to do next, this is the conference to go to. You'll meet people who are trying new things. Learn from them before you take it on your own if you're not one of the early adopters. So it's a fun event.
Yeah, and today actually is our final day for Super Saver Reads. We try to make it really economically feasible for employers and advisors who want to come and participate, may have budget restrictions, but come up, you know, come to our event, $99, right, Jonathan, to register. Go to the forum website, theiaccforum.com, and we hope we see you in Atlanta. I'd now like to welcome our first guest on the program, Michael Romanzo, a Chief Strategy Officer with RX Benefits. Michael, good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
Great. Good to have you on the program. You coming to us from Birmingham today?
Actually, I'm in Atlanta, but RX Benefits corporate headquarters is in Birmingham.
We should have had you in studio today, Michael. We're up here in Alpharetta.
I'm not far in East Cobb.
Yeah, there you go. That's where I raised my family, in East Cobb. Well, Michael, nice to have you here. You guys are doing some really interesting work. Give our audience a background on RX Benefits, please.
Sure, I'd be glad to. RX Benefits is a pharmacy services and administration company. It's 20 years young, located in Birmingham, Alabama. And we essentially offer four lines of business to the marketplace. The first line of business is our pharmacy administration business, where we provide pharmacy benefit services directly to self-insured employers in the small to mid-market space, groups of about 1,000 employees and smaller who want to carve out their pharmacy benefit that are self-insured. We have over 300 clients located throughout the country and essentially have members in all 50 states. Our second line of business is our pharmacy consulting business, and that's where we actually do procurement for pharmacy benefits for larger employers who choose to go the route of contracting directly with one of the three big PBM firms. And in that instance, we will conduct an RFP, and in most cases, our clients retain us for ongoing consulting during the life of the PBM contract. Our third line of business is pharmacy auditing, where we actually audit pharmacy contracts to make sure that employers receive the economics that were promised in the pharmacy contract. And then the last line of business is our health services segment business, where we provide access to our employers and their brokers and consultants to health-related products. We have a diabetes monitoring program that uses a cellular chip in a blood glucose monitor. And while that in and of itself is not revolutionary, what makes this program unique is that there's a back-end intervention center. And so when a member records their blood sugar, should they have an inappropriate reading, either too high or too low, we have an intervention center that contacts the member and intervenes to try to mitigate the unusual blood read. So a broad range of services in the marketplace. We seem to be extremely successful in targeting the smaller and mid-market self-insured employers, and it's been a fun ride.
Hey Michael, do you primarily focused on the self-insured market? Is that your niche?
That's correct.
Okay, that's great.
Michael, it's Ron Bachman here. Can you tell us about Smart Pharmacy Economics, one of the services that you provide?
Absolutely. So pharmacy economics, or smart pharmacy economics, is a phrase that we've coined to really put a little different spin on the dollars that are spent to treat patients using drugs. So let me give you a reference point. In today's world, in a self-insured employer's world, half the people use 96% of the dollars in pharmacy spend. And those people have chronic or complex conditions. And so essentially when someone has a chronic or complex condition, they'll go to the physician. 88% of the time, the doctor will write up one or more prescriptions to treat or manage that condition.
Mm-hmm.
And so while we want to make sure that the cost of those medications are affordable both to the patient and to the employer who's paying the majority share, we also want to ensure that we have the right drug and the right dose to the right patient at the right time, and that we then also take advantage of treatment versus cure so that we can create value propositions around disease states such as hepatitis C, which up until recently was only treatable, but now in 95% of the cases, it's actually curable.
Hmm.
So in some instances, smart pharmacy economics means making patients that are that have chronic and complex diseases more adherent to their essential medications. And in some cases, it's creating a better ROI, a better return on investment, when you spend dollars in pharmacy, but you cure a disease like hepatitis C, and you save downstream medical costs on the medical side.
Does it also, does smart pharmacy economics also help both employers and their employees make better decisions around not just adherence and the right drug choices, but maybe cost-effective alternatives to some of the higher-priced, you know, drugs?
Yeah, that's an excellent follow-up question. And absolutely, smart economics really impacts the physician and the prescribing patterns that they use, the members and the drug products that they purchase at the counter, and how they go about purchasing it, and then the employer who builds what we call rule sets around the prescription benefits to help drive and channel members to use the most cost-effective drugs. So part of smart pharmacy economics is to have a formulary. And a formulary is a list of preferred drugs that once a doctor deems a patient requires drug therapy for a particular condition, we then direct them to write a prescription from a drug formulary, which is heavily populated first with generic drugs, and then secondly with drugs that are brand drugs that are most efficacious and also cost-effective. Secondly, we build programs around step therapy so that we try to encourage the use of generics first before patients, you know, go immediately to the more cost egregious brand drugs. And then lastly, we use technology. So member websites, consumer websites like GoodRx and MedTipster and others to help make members better consumers by getting them to go to those drug stores that sell drugs cheaper than others.
Michael, on your pharmacy consulting, sounds like you'll take the role of going out and looking for the right PBM and doing some pricing and negotiating for employers. Is that correct?
That's correct. We have a proprietary library of several hundred questions that we can tailor a qualitative RFP on behalf of an employer. We tailor that RFP very specific to the employer's pharmacy program objectives on things that matter most. We then have a second section that's our mandatory business requirements, which include many requirements around the financial offering that must be met, terms and conditions that are favorable to the employer. And then once we have whittled the marketplace down to two or three potential vendors, we then bring them in for oral presentations so that an employer can meet and greet the folks that they will potentially do business with. We help them through that entire process, including memorializing a decision point that they can then share with the C-suite executives and then negotiate final terms and conditions with the PBM. And then we stick around during the life of that contract to make sure that those terms and conditions, in fact, hold true.
What's the biggest value added for employers? It's a very confusing area, the whole area of pricing and contracting and rebates and all that kind of stuff that goes on in the pharmacy area. I mean, it's 20-25% of their healthcare spend, and yet it's it's very confusing for employers to understand what's really going on. What's some of the biggest confusions that employers have that your service helps to clear up, and what are some of the biggest value adds that you make in doing that consulting work?
Sure. So pharmacy is very complex, and part of it is the nature of the industry and the nomenclature that's used. But the second reason why it's complex is because many employers lack in-depth experience in-house. They don't have a staff of pharmacists or clinicians that will help them navigate through this complex benefit. So when we consult, we make sure that we break in, things down into simplistic terms on behalf of an employer. So while the pricing of the pharmaceutical products are discounts off of average wholesale prices, and brands are different than generics, and generics are different than specialty, and then you have channel management between mail order and retail, we tend to reduce things down to an average script price that allows an employer to have a relative value, a very simple value, that they can relate to both historically and then on a prospective basis. The second thing that we do is we help define terms and conditions. Believe it or not, everyone thinks that a generic drug is a generic drug, but when you read a pharmacy contract, there are certain pharmacy contracts that try to exclude certain generic drugs from consideration. Generally, those generic drugs that are new to market or that behave from a price standpoint more like a brand drug and aren't discounted nearly as much. The third thing we do is we make sure that we have complete transparency into the pharma rebates that an employer can earn as a cost offset on behalf of their employee population. And then we give the employer an option on how those pharma rebates can be applied, either as a cost reduction to the drug spend or to a price reduction to the overall prescription, so that the member also gains value as well. So essentially what we try to do is create simplicity around the complexness of pharmacy. We try to isolate the areas that we know that are less valuable and make them and clarify them to make them more valuable. And at the end of the day, our job is to create a contract that is auditable, that's transparent, and that the employer understands how they actually purchase pharma.
Michael, with more employers asking their employees and families to take shared responsibility in their healthcare costs and healthcare decisions, including pharma, do you help employers in their educational and communication efforts with their employees?
We absolutely do. So we have a team of marketing experts that are a resource for us and our employers. We have sample communications that we help employers write as they communicate the benefit changes and benefit designs to their employees. We also work directly with the PBMs when we're consulting to make sure that we're leveraging all of the tools and capabilities, whether it's website technology or refill reminders or any other programs that are designed to improve the member engagement and the member experience in pharmacy so that the member becomes more of an owner of the program. We've seen recently, a huge shift to high deductible programs, and that applies to pharmacy as well. And those are really financial models, not so much a clinical model. And so we want to make sure that if an employer is offering that type of program to their employees, that the employees have a knowledge domain on how to best become a better consumer. So how to shop for a drug if they're paying 100%, where what pharmacy perhaps is offering a better price at 100% copay for certain drugs, how to take advantage of the $4 or $10 generic drug offerings that some of the big box pharmacies offer. And so we packaged a lot of those kinds of communications and also help employers create incentives to help drive utilization of the lowest cost, you know, pharmacy pharmaceuticals for the members. So it's a very comprehensive strategy.
Michael, you know, we're at the end of our segment. Really enjoyed having you. I want to give you a chance to kind of recap and leave our audience with a few takeaways, please.
Well, I appreciate that. First, thank you for having me. I would like to just leave everyone with the following comments. Number one, pharmacy is complex, and don't be afraid to understand that it is complex and use professional resources to help you become a better purchaser of pharmacy. Number two, employers in particular have a choice. They can buy pharmacy either through their health plan in a carved-in arrangement, or they can buy it on a carved-out arrangement. We've seen historically the economics work better for a self-insured employer if they buy direct rather than through a carved-in program. And then lastly, recognize that while we think about the spend of pharmacy and the use of pharmaceuticals as a line item expenditure, we really should be thinking about pharmacy in terms of return on investment. And if we can use a pharmaceutical agent to cure a disease like hepatitis C, while we incur some big upfront expenses, we in fact are making our population healthier and we are reducing downstream medical costs.
Michael, how can our audience get in touch with you?
They can reach me at RX Benefits, which we have our website, rxbenefits.com. They can also reach me at M. Romanzo, that's R-O-M-A-N-Z-O, my first letter, my first initial M, at rxbenefits.com.
Michael, thank you so much. And, you know, we'd like to have you join us here coming up at IHC Forum and Expo here in Atlanta, May 24th through 26th. But thank you very much for having us and joining us today, and have a great weekend.
Glad to be with you, and same to you. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Good stuff. You know, talking about, when you're talking about, for, you know, emerging niches,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is an old niche that's been around for a long time, but it was hidden. It was hidden inside health insurance cards and health plans. No one paid attention to it. Yeah, major employers looked at their, you know, formularies, but come to mid-market and others that are now self-insured and pay much attention to it. Big cost, big concern.
It's a big area of confusion for most people because the industry itself, the whole pharmaceutical industry, is kind of shrouded with some might even say secrecy. You know, he mentioned AWP, average wholesale price. Many people say it's not average, not wholesale, or it's a price.
Yeah.
But so the industry sets their own standards. And so transparency is critical in that area if you really want to control the costs. And having experts like Michael and his organization, RX Benefits, really can be absolutely critical in choosing the right medications that are available to your employees, helping your employees choose the right medication for themselves, being sure of compliance, education, all those issues, because it is 20-25% of the spend. So a lot of dollars that employers are putting out there, and you really need to pay attention to it.
Well, and to his point, too, about particularly around drug adherence, around chronic conditions,
mm-hmm.
I mean, not only do employers care about their employees, but their bubble will burst if they don't help their employees manage their chronic care disease, you know, their health cost bubble.
Yeah, and a lot of the costs, you know, if you go with sort of traditional services many times, they'll help you move from a brand to a generic.
Yeah.
But the real issue in many cases is how do you move brand generic to over-the-counter? A lot of things have gone over-the-counter, and you can save a lot of money if you yeah. understand all these different issues and the ins and outs. So it's not just the prescription drug costs, but it's the whole healthcare nature of dealing with whatever illness you have, which includes over-the-counter drugs in many cases.
Yeah, and very big need to know on part of consumers now, too, with they being exposed to more cost, having more shared responsibility, and that never used to be the case.
Coming out of their HSA accounts, they're going to go hand your, more.
You just go hand your insurance card to the pharmacy and say, it cost me $4, right?
Right. give me a bottle of ibuprofen for a dollar or two rather than, you know, Celebrex for, you know, $100 a month. So yeah. People start looking at the alternatives, and there is an awful lot of options out there. And the idea that an awful lot of the prescriptions can be very expensive. I mean, the technology and the discovery of medications and, in the future, the whole genomics analysis of individuals, how drugs affect everybody is different. And we're going to find out that there's a lot of very expensive drugs that might help some people, not help others. So finding the right drug for your illness, for your own genetic makeup, is going to be really critical in the future.
Good stuff. Again, I want to remind our audience, Super Saver Rates on Forum and Expo, and sign up at IHCforum.com. I'd like to welcome our second. Well, we're on our second guest. We'll talk a little bit more about, we've got, sorry about that to everyone. We've got coming up next month, we talk about thought leadership on these programs a lot and have a lot of thought leaders on this program. You know, we talk about it, Jonathan, through the content you produce on a regular basis. But we kind of put and we talk about it at our events. Thought leadership is prevalent around our events. But we put a real focus on it in the month of April around really our anchor annual, our annual allocation. Ron, and you're always one of the featured as, chairman of the advisory board with your leadership piece on healthcare consumerism, and you're joined by some pretty good company.
Absolutely. It's always fun to try to figure out something to write that'll get everybody's attention and be worth their time to read. Because you're really asking people these days to take a time out of their day, a busy day, to read some information that you think is valuable to them. The article I put in this month hopefully kind of puts healthcare consumerism in perspective. We look back at the history of healthcare in the United States, and not to be boring about history, but showing how it leads up in all the different stages to healthcare consumerism and where it goes beyond that. Account-based plans, we've talked about HSAs and HRAs, all that was developed in the early 2000s as part of legislation and regulatory changes. But healthcare consumerism is bigger than that, and we show in that sort of timeline how healthcare consumerism really evolved. If you're in the market, you don't know sort of where you came from. One of the old sayings, if you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it. Well, knowing a little bit of the history of healthcare consumerism, I think, might be instrumental in some people really getting an understanding about their products and services and where they fit in, and maybe a little bit about where it's all going. So,
and I think
it's an exciting document.
Right. And I think the other part about it is just the depth and breadth of healthcare consumerism that Outlook represents. Jonathan, we've got, can you share with our audience a sample of some of the other expert contributors we have there?
Yeah. Give me a second here.
It's always a very august list of folks. Again, there's a lot of material at IHC that is sort of an aggregation of the marketplace and what's being written out there, so it's timely, but also a lot of origination of articles, and this particular publication does a lot of that.
Yeah, so we have Wendy Lynch, of course, at Alterm Institute. She's working on a piece on health engagement. John Hickman, who is always at our events, a legal expert. He's writing on compliance, especially around account-based plans. Laura Carabello on medical travel, another regular contributor. Eastbridge Consulting Group, of course, they're kind of experts in voluntary supplemental. They're providing a piece. We have CC Connolly, who is now the head of American Community Health Association of Community Health Plans. And
she's doing some really quality work with health.
Yeah, yep. So she came there from PwC recently, and she's writing a piece on health plans, where the state of that market is. So a lot of good stuff.
And I think, American Association of Health Plans, not to, I'm not trying to bash AHIP there, but they're stepping up to really fill a void with AHIP trying to find its legs, fill a void, with what's happening with AHIP. So very quality group. People don't know them. They ought to check them out and read this.
Wide range of different topics. It'd be a great read.
Well, I'd like to welcome our next guest on the program right now, Dr. Abby Leibowitz, who is co-president and co-founder and chief medical officer of Health Advocate, one of the leaders in really helping employees make the right healthcare decisions within, for themselves and their families. Doctor, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
We're great. Great to have you on here.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, you guys were one of the leaders. I go way back with Marty, by the way, back to my days, one of your co-founders. But give our audience, I think most people know Health Advocate, but give a little background on Health Advocate and where you are today in the space, and then we'll talk about, using data to drive employee behavior.
Yeah, we We started Health Advocate 16 years ago around the idea that healthcare was confusing and hard for the average guy to figure out. We thought it would be interesting to see if we could provide support to people facing any kind of healthcare issue. And that's 16 years ago. I got to tell you, nothing's made anything easier in the ensuing 16 years. So, but that was the model. The idea was that what would the world look like if anybody that needed help with a healthcare issue could call on somebody that had the time, the interest, and the experience to help them? And we put the company together around that model. 16 years later, that is still the core of what we do. We serve more than 11,500 clients across the country. They employ or have members about 10 million people. The service is always available to the individual employee, their spouse, their dependents, their parents, and their parents-in-law, which makes about 50 million people eligible to use our service. And we have today about a dozen other things that we hang on to that advocacy model, some of which we're going to talk about today regarding data. But we have a wellness program with 800 clients. We've got an employee assistance program with 2 million members. So there are lots of things that we do that go beyond simply the advocacy piece that we started the company around.
Michael, you got great information. I'm Dr. Leibowitz. There's a lot of great information that you're giving. You're breaking up a little bit on this end. I don't know if our listeners are getting the same. I don't know if there's anything that you know, on your phone that might change to be helpful if you're on a speakerphone.
But, all right, let me try it. I was using a headset, so I'll try it direct, and maybe that'll be better.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you tell our audience a little bit? We talk about data analytics. What does that really mean, and how do you use data analytics, and what databases are you using that might improve employees' health care?
Okay. So let me paint it to you this way. When we first started the company, we trained our people so that when somebody would call in, let's just say they called in because they had a question about a bill, that we could say, you know, we'll help you with that bill, but what other medical conditions might you be dealing with? Because the only reason that somebody got a bill was because they needed health care. And while a lot of that is, you know, one-and-done sort of stuff, you know, I sprained my ankle, I had a cold, that kind of thing, much of it relates to an ongoing or chronic need. So we, from the very beginning, were always looking at the opportunity to extend the discussion into a health-related interaction. I thought it would be neat if we knew that, for example, you had diabetes before we picked up the phone to talk to you, so that regardless of what our conversation was about, we might be able to weave in something relating to diabetes or heart disease or whatever. To do that, we bring in medical claims and pharmacy information, self-reported information from a personal health record, the results of disease management programs, ours or somebody else's, biometric results, whatever we can get in terms of digital information. And we build an administrative patient record so that we can identify things about the people that we're dealing with and highlight gaps in care or benefit opportunities that might apply to them. So that when I answer the phone, I know not only that you're an asthmatic, but that you've not filled your prescription for your rescue medication, or you're using a brand name that's not on formulary when there's a cheaper generic that you could take advantage of. Those kinds of things. And so while I'll still help you with anything that you need my help with, I get the chance to say, by the way, how about your asthma medicine? Would you like my help in getting your prescription refilled?
So the benefit to employees and their families is, you know, smarter decisions around care, smarter decisions around cost. Correct?
Exactly. And importantly, we think we're making a difference in the way that people not only use the healthcare system, but look after their own health. It's a much different relationship that you can strike with somebody when they pick up the phone and call you, as opposed to when you pick up the phone and call them. So when somebody says, I need your help and I'm going to, you know, call you on the phone, I'm going to talk to you about it, they're far more receptive to the message that says, you know, by the way, I can help you with this additional thing.
Dr. Leibowitz, a lot of people struggle with the kind of information that you're providing and service you're providing with programs that are integrated directly with, say, their insurance carrier versus getting somebody who's sort of a best of practice outside, maybe like you guys are. I notice a lot of your folks, and even your senior leadership, are sort of ex-Aetna folks. Can you describe a little difference between, you know, sort of an outside separate organization like yours versus somebody who has it carved in and integrated with the rest of their program?
Yeah, and you're right. When I originally put the company together, I brought together five people that had worked with me in our roles at Aetna and U.S. Healthcare before that, and people I knew in the industry. We were really ideally positioned to understand the benefit side of the world. And, of course, as a physician, I understood the what it's like to treat a patient and deal with clinical issues. So that aside, we presented ourselves as an independent advocate. We have no vested interest in anything other than getting the person to the best possible outcome. And I think that's important. And it's not to disparage the health plans. I think the health plans do a great job, but a lot of the interactions that we have with people are because they didn't get what they thought they should get from a benefit perspective from the plan, rightly or wrongly, or they have a general mistrust of the motivation behind the message of the health plan. And while I want to emphasize, I think the plans do a great job, and I think a lot of that perception is misplaced, it's there nonetheless. And so the idea that we're not the health plan, that we're not bundled into, you know, part of your benefit, that we're not looking after our own well-being, but rather yours, is a very big difference when we go out into the marketplace.
Can you tell our audience a little bit about what your business model is and your target market? How do you charge for the services, a PMPM or some other basis, so they can understand what sort of the costing might be?
Yeah, it is typically a per employee per month model, not strictly a PMPM model, although we do some work with some plans and distributors that are on a PMPM. But that's just a way of looking at the per employee cost a little differently. So it is
right.
a per employee per month model. The core advocacy service is a service that sells in the marketplace for about $1.50 per employee per month. Gets much less expensive to very large companies. We have a number of distributor relationships as well with all the various distribution players and consulting houses. We're in several of the private exchanges. We're in several public exchanges through health plan partners. So we fit in lots of different places. But we like to say it's an inexpensive service that provides great value. When you look at, you know, healthcare premiums today in the $8,000 to $12,000 per family per year range, you're looking at Health Advocate as a service that most employers can put into their benefit program for $15 to $18 a year. That's just not, you know, it pales by comparison to the benefit that we offer. And then, of course, we do have other services like wellness and our pricing transparency tools and employee assistance programs that are priced in addition, but always on a PEPM basis.
Yeah. What size employers are you typically targeting?
Yeah, we have 11,500 clients, and that counts directly contracted clients only. So if we do business through Independence Blue Cross in Philadelphia or Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan, and, you know, they've got thousands of clients, we count them as one. So lots of clients. We have 6,000 clients that have fewer than 100 employees. So we're very familiar with things in the small market, the middle market, and very large markets as well. We have go from customers with 2 and 3 employees to customers with 350, 400,000 employees, and everything in the middle. But I would say our sweet spot is the point at which an employer first becomes interested in being self-insured. That varies by market and literally year to year sometime. So it runs somewhere in the, I'm going to say, 700 to 2,500 up to 5,000 employee lives. That's kind of the sweet spot of the market for us.
Doctor, it's been great having you on the program, and really, we really enjoyed this discussion and really appreciate you taking time out of your day to join us and kind of share your insights. I'd like to give you a chance to leave our audience with a few takeaways, if you would, please.
Well, I think the key element here is that healthcare is confusing, and the result of that confusion is inefficiency, costs that are higher than they need to be, and outcomes that are less discrete than they ought to be. It's a very, for whatever the benefit side of the story is, as confusing, you know, with deductibles and coinsurance and narrow networks and all that. The healthcare delivery system, the medical care system, is just as fragmented, just as confusing, and just as difficult to navigate. So anybody who crosses the line from being an interested observer of healthcare to a patient in the system understands exactly what I'm talking about. The idea of finding and using somebody that can help guide you through that world is extremely important. We certainly, you know, we provide a channel for that in our own way, but there are many other ways that the individual consumer can look at how they can get help in the system, whether it's from their doctor, from a friend, from a family member, from their health plan. But it's very important to have somebody that you can work with.
Doctor, I really appreciate it. You know, thanks for joining us. You have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks for inviting us. That's great. Take care.
Take care. Good stuff. Two good segments.
They kind of relate. You know, you've got the really, you might call consumer support services, advocacy services, helping people navigate, get better information on prescription drugs, get better help and support on their medical care. The advocacy program here, the health advocate program, it all kind of connects and show how the industry is moving forward to help the consumer who has never really had to take that kind of responsibility. Now has a financial stake in the game to have something to rely on, more information, more help, support, you know, a phone call away, a text message away, whatever it is that they're getting. It really is useful in making this an efficient marketplace for spending your dollars on healthcare.
And I would add, too, that helping the employers have never really had to focus on making these services available to consumers and really knowing that if they do so, not only offer better care, better cost efficiencies to their employees and their families, but it'll help them bend the cost curve too. So, I mean, it all ties itself together in this emerging, changing healthcare consumerism market.
Yeah.
After all, this is healthcare consumerism radio, right?
Yeah, to get everybody aligned in the same pattern here of saving money for both employers and employees. And, you know, it's critical. Employers obviously know about this because still in many cases the employees don't have the time to go out and figure out which vendors actually will provide them the best information. So you have somebody who's got the big pot of dollars and an employer self-insured plan that's going out and selecting those vendors that will help support their interest in lowering the cost from employer side, but also helping the employee be healthy and productive and back to work and knowing what to do for themselves and their family.
And to our audience out there, we really appreciate you joining us today. And I just want to remind everyone that you can access all of these podcasts on our website. You know, go to the radio tab. You can access all the podcasts in the history of all that have been on our radio program. And you can find a very diverse series of discussions and podcasts. Two other reminders. Today is the final day to join us in Atlanta for only $99. Super saver rate. Go to our forum website, theihccforum.com. If you're a broker out there and you want to really, if you're struggling to get your arms around this benefit technology and what are some of the right choices, what are the decisions that you need to make, what are the things you need to think about, join us on our webinar that we're co-producing with HCentive on March 29th at 11 o'clock. Sign up at our IHCC website, theihcc.com. We really appreciate you being with us. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you next Friday on Healthcare Consumerism Radio.